This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Kusu Chuang and Wong Xiaoning. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 29th of August, and we're this much closer to the weekend, but it's also the first day we've had you in the studios with us, Chuang. How have you been doing?
Okay, my nose is blocked again. This weather is driving me nuts, like
you're
tell you.
A bung up kind of guy, aren't you?
Bunged up, boomed up, mate, as my friend in Scotland would say.
Nothing you can do about it, huh?
It feels like a little bit like morning sickness, but not that I would know what it feels like.
Yeah, I was
like.
Just going to ask, how would you know what it's all about?
People tell me. Some people say.
You live vicariously through your wife, is it?
Yes.
Some people have sympathetic pregnancies.
They do.
Kusu Chuang and the word sympathetic.
How have you, what about you, Xiaoning? How have you been doing this week?
I'm okay. I'm back in the studio after 2 days off. It's nice to see all of y'all again. So.
The weather is like wreaking havoc with health, isn't it?
Unbelievably bad, guys. So Stay indoors.
Yeah, so tell me you didn't run during this 2 days off.
Who are you running from?
Oh, y'all. All of y'all.
BFM.
I didn't run the last few days. I confess I ran on Saturday, but even I'm scared. I'm a little bit scared. I'll probably be forced to do my little runs on the boring treadmill from now on.
Yeah, because Xiaoning is the one that's saying, oh, and don't go out, guys. But she's actually the biggest culprit out there of actually getting out and running in all weather.
You know, when you have to exercise, right? The treadmill is like hell, you know, because it's like
so boring.
It's like Alcatraz.
It's so boring. As if time slows down.
And then you're
incredibly.
Like, then you feel like this mouse, right? You know this. You know the mice running.
The little hamster.
Hamster. Yeah.
No, but I like the treadmill because first of all, it's inside a gym, which is nice and temperature controlled.
See, that's the reason why there's a category B of people who don't like that kind of thing. Because it's not fresh air, lah.
Yeah, I guess so. In the meantime, though, this morning we have lots of things planned for you, lots of things to discuss. So, what are we going to be talking about first?
Well, I'll be talking about how apps make home life so much easier, but is that really good for bonding?
Curious and curiouser, said Alice.
And what else are we going to be talking about?
I talk about Malaysians who overstay their welcome. That's another one.
And you're not talking about your relatives, though.
And sometimes, depends. Depends on which ones you're talking about.
All right. And so don't forget, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we are going to be talking about the secret to immortality. No, actually, whether or not optimism actually keeps you alive longer. So stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was 4 out of 5 by Arctic Monkeys. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Chuang and Xiaoning. Now, apparently, there's been a new study suggesting that optimistic people are more likely to live longer. And I guess, you know, there are some problems cited with the study, primarily that the sample size were all white. Most of them were not in the low-income bracket. But I guess it's an interesting or intriguing idea because we know that the brain is a powerful thing, right? You know, we know about things like placebo effects. And do you think that keeping optimistic will actually help you stay alive longer?
Yeah, statistically, I think, because if you're more optimistic, that means you're probably going to have a healthier lifestyle. Maybe you're going to be more comfortable in your surroundings. And, you know, there's a high chance that you won't, you know, take your own life and you're not suicidal. I mean, but having said that, I had a 94-year-old aunt who was the most miserable person on the face of this earth. And she lived to nearly, Mahathir's age. So I'm not sure the statistics work, but
there are outliers there everywhere.
There are.
Or maybe it's her, like, deep unhappiness that keeps her going.
She just uses
her misery keeps her company, literally.
Motivates
her.
Best friends,
on.
Right?
Yeah.
She just used to sit in the corner and just moan about everything. And
so that's what keeps her going, because every day she's got something new to moan about, right? Everything is like moan.
Yeah, I guess it's what you find joy in.
Yeah, maybe that's what she found joy in.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know, conversely, then if you have a positive outlook on life and you self-actualize where you want to be, and you know you've got a rosy, positive set of relationships with your family and your friends, I think those are good things.
Yeah, you have things to live for then, right? Yeah. You wake up in the morning and you look forward to the day. right? Rather than moan and groan. And you plan. I think if you're optimistic, you're always planning. And if you plan in your mind, you kind of keep going, right? You have something to live for almost.
And then you fool your body into thinking you're going to get to 94.
No, you have to aim for 100 or 110
I don't want to live that long, like, honestly, right? Seriously.
Well, I guess it's health, right? Because if you want to, the idea of a 100-year-old person or a 110-year-old is that they're frail and you don't want to reach that point. But if you're 100 years old and you're fit as a fiddle, then you're technically still able to do a lot of the same things you'd be able to do at 80.
Okay, so Mahathir is 90.
More difficult, but, you know.
94.
Mm. Can he, you know, run 5 kilometers?
He cycled 11K.
Are you serious?
Yes,
11K?
Yeah. It was in the papers.
That fella's a bionic man. was he League Majors in disguise?
Who knows, really? But I guess, so then what would you do to keep yourself optimistic? Because this article from The Guardian spoke to one of the researchers that did the study, and he suggested gratitude journals, or, you know, writing down 3 things every day that keep you happy. And you're looking a little bit skeptical, Kusutra.
We both rolled our eyeballs, by the way. Simultaneously.
Yeah, right? Because this kind of stuff that tabloid writers would produce. But I think there's 2 main determinants to good positive outlooks on life. Number one, get enough sleep, for sure, at least 7 hours. And the other thing is exercise, because once you exercise, the feel-good factor is natural. Yeah. You know that, Xiaoning.
Yeah, I'm a big exercise junkie. Yes.
The feeling you get after that is amazing.
Yeah, and then you kind of develop your whole life according to exercise. Sorry, that sounds really bad. But you plan things according to exercise. So you're like, oh, I want to run this track. I want to go on this little hike. You know, and it becomes part of your lifestyle. And you enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
And it keeps you going. And of course, you look much better. Oh, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah.
So, but would you do this then? You know, write down 3 things a day that keep you happy?
I'm sorry. No, it's not me. No. I wouldn't like...
Okay, like that one you just said, right, Xiaoning? If you exercise, then you're quite fit. You're not overweight. You know, you're good complexion. And then you feel good about yourself and you look in the mirror, right? Mm. And then it kind of like just perpetuates itself. And then it just goes from day to day. Then it's kind of like a positive cycle.
Yeah, I'm sure that your body is also filled with endorphins, all the exercise. So it keeps you happy.
But there's also the other suggestion was what they call the best possible self-exercise, which is envisaging your future. And I guess this is a little bit like what you mentioned, Xiaoning, right? Planning for the future.
Yeah.
And how far actually do you plan in that sense?
Not that far, I would have to say. But I do plan. Holidays is something I really plan for. I look forward to. That keeps me very happy that I know I've got breaks coming up. Yeah. I look forward to seeing new places. And then the best, of course, is coming home. And a little bit, I think you can also plan a little bit about your career, where you want to go. That makes a big difference, I think, when you're in your 40s or your 30s, right?
Yeah, I envisage my future all the time. It involves food, the beach, exercising, and having a few drinks with friends at night. And that's it.
Yeah, I think
life.
I think the dangerous thing is once you hit say 70s and 80s, at least from what I've seen with my grandparents, it seems very tempting for them to say, "Oh no, you know, I'm old already. I don't have to. Yeah. I don't want to plan, you know, beyond 5 years." And that's awful because you're giving yourself practically a time limit, right? And
yeah, then, like a finite lifespan in a way.
Yeah. So for the longest time, let me tell you, my grandmother was convinced that she wasn't going to live to 81. She's now 86. Okay, so, you know, knock on wood. But she just refused to plan anything. And it was very difficult to get her to be optimistic about life. And once she passed that 81 mark, it was kind of like she relaxed a little bit.
Or she like, no holds barred. I've got to do the bungee jump. I've got to do the roller coaster. Did she like whip out her bucket list and like, I've got so many things to do, guys?
Not quite. But, you know, I think it would be actually physically difficult for her to do a bungee jump at this point. But yeah, I think it was good because after that she started to plan, she started to be a little bit more engaged with life and with her family around her. So it was overall a very good experience once she actually stopped you know, limiting herself almost psychologically, right? But do let us know what you think. Do you think that optimism will keep you alive longer? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a few messages coming up for you and then more fascinating discussions, so please be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was World of Pain by Cream, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Chuang and Shaoning. Now, there's this interesting article in the Financial Times. The article writer crashed her bike and broke a leg, and as well as her bike, and so she found herself bedridden on top of one of the highest hills in San Francisco, and she found herself thinking, "Oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to get around? How am I going to get anything done?" But found that actually, once she was there, you know, if you have a credit card and a phone. Or a smartphone, at least, you can get many things delivered right to your doorstep, because nowadays the development of the app has become such a powerful thing. You can get your laundry sent to you, you can get your food sent to you, you can get things picked up and delivered, you can get a cleaner hired. And this is the future, guys, because we're already seeing it coming in with Grab and Grab's expansion of services, courier services. So it's fascinating. Do you make use of some of these apps?
Yeah, I do. I have ordered like cleaning services. I moved house with it. I use Gao Tim.
Oh.
Have you heard of that? Yeah, you can arrange everything. I even had my landscaping done in my house with Gao
Tim. Good Lord!
Yeah,
it wasn't
bad at all. I thoroughly recommend it, because it was one thing great about all this is that it's very transparent. You know your pricing straight away, right? And it's a fixed pricing. Sometimes you get these guys come in and then, you know, halfway they want to negotiate something and then you're like really annoyed already, right? Which is why Grab is so successful versus, let's admit it, some of the taxis. So Gao Tim does that for you too. It's so easy to use, I swear by it.
She's just an ambassador for the brand.
No plug to them, but it was a good way to move house and get my house sorted when I moved in.
Interesting. What about you, Kusutra?
No, apps are here to stay for sure, especially the ride-hailing ones. But I find that because there's so many apps for so many things, you have to manage so many things on your phone and so many passwords, and then eventually sometimes they log you out, right? Because it's a 6-month thing. You know, if you don't log in, then they log you out for some safety reasons.
It's okay, la, Kosi Chuang. You cannot remember the password, la. You're old.
No, so many, la. You have the same password for all your apps.
I'm not saying that on air. What do you think? I thought you used the cat's birthday.
Cat.
That's what we said. Use the cat's birthday.
You know, the worst passwords are the one where you use your date of birth and everyone is the date of birth.
Yeah,
like,
that's the worst. Yeah. I just log in with Facebook for everything. I'm giving Facebook all of my data.
I don't know. So I've got this inherent mistrust of apps and platforms, and but they're so good. I mean, I agree with you, they're so good.
Yeah,
so
they're
good,
really
so
convenient, good, so good. Right? Mm-hmm. And this article really resonates with me, because my younger sister is exactly like this, okay? She will get the Grab to pick the kids up from school.
Yeah.
And then she'll get the food guys to deliver lunch to the kids. And she does it all remotely from the office.
I tell you, for 9 or 11 bucks after delivery charge, Ravi banana leaf is an amazing deal on I'm serious. Ravi banana leaf on Grab food is the best deal in the known universe. It is the best.
Yeah, but see, the thing I thought about when I was reading this article, right, was that it cites so many different apps. And after a point,
and that's only
like,
the UK.
And that's only in, this is the US, this is San Francisco.
And
I was like, how do you keep track of all of them? You know?
So many.
There are too many. And eventually, I guess we will see some, you know, some won't survive. Some will merge with others. Some will be acquired by others. And you will probably eventually find yourself in super app territories, right? With Gojek and Grab. And for me as a consumer, I think that's the way to go, because I'm like, I don't want to be, you know, remembering all of these different passwords to all of these different apps. But as from a competition standpoint, that's a little bit more worrying.
Yeah. So when you've got a consolidation exercise, right? Like, say, so how a big guy, like, say, for example, if Grab wanted to go and buy all these, you know, the best and most popular services, they could. They've got the balance sheet to do it. But then, exactly, right? Anti-competition things kick in and then they take advantage of you. It's not as if they haven't already, right? Because of the ride-hailing services there. They overcharge by a great deal more than the next guy, and that's because they've got the lion's share.
Yeah, well, the idea here is to kind of just squeeze out your competition, right? For these apps, it's all about market share, right?
Yeah.
Being the biggest boy in the room.
Yeah.
And so far, they kind of succeeded. And even like, have you noticed like the food delivery, one of them, grocery delivery has kind of shut down? Honestbee, for example?
Honestbee shut down.
Yeah. Oh, have they actually shut down?
Yes, and they were prominent. They were all over KL. I used to use them all the time.
Were they any good?
They were very good, actually. So the question is, you know, because we have these services so cheap. A lot of them are giving you free delivery or delivery for like 1, 2, 3 ringgit.
But how long is that going to last?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the downside to this is some of these guys just can't last that long because we know the burn rate for all these apps is incredibly high. So maybe that's the idea, right? Who's the last man standing? And then once you're there, then you start raising those rates like before you know it.
Exactly. Like that's what Netflix is doing. Now. That's on the game plan, right? Mm. It's quite affordable. And then after a while, they just whack you.
Kill the competition.
Yeah, but Netflix is now seeing a lot of challenges because Netflix was the original disruptor and now they're the incumbent. So you've got things like Disney Plus coming in. You've got Apple's streaming services as
Stranger Things. Stranger Things, that damn show.
We know you're
has been anchored to that.
You are obsessed
platform.
With that. You have plugged it like all the time.
Really?
Yeah, you've
not
mentioned.
No, there. Really?
Yes. Okay. Yes,
at least three times.
Ayo, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's but so I good, lah.
Because you pretend survive. You're the kid, is it? Kosu Trump. One of the kids doing this
no,
thing.
No, I'm the Demogorgon.
Now we know what you're going to be dressing up as for Halloween. We will make it happen. Well, do let us know what you think. Will you be taking part in this app revolution? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news now. And to take you there, here is More Than a Feeling by Boston, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Friday, I'm in Love by The Cure, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Kuzu Chuang and Wang Shaning. Now, there's an article in the Rakyat Post this morning highlighting the fact that some 33,000 Malaysians have applied for refugee status in Australia. And this is something that actually I spoke with the Australian High Commissioner about not that long ago on The Breakfast Grill, His Excellency Andrew Gledzinowski. And it's really just quite a shocking number. Because it's not just that we have 30-odd Malaysians applying for refugee status, it's that we actually have the highest number of visa overstays in Australia and higher than the next three countries combined.
Plane jumpers, basically, right?
Basically.
And it's the favourite destinations are, in no particular order, the UK, Australia, Canada and America. And I actually have first-hand experience because a relative...
Did you jump a plane?
No. I got back on the plane and came back home. I prefer the tropics. It's warmer. But the husband of a cousin in my family was a plane jumper. He jumped about 35 years ago. He's now... He's got more money than God now because he started a restaurant chain. Chinese food, basically. Yeah? He did chop fun in the UK. Mm. Now he's got like a gazillion branches. But it's a thing. And why... There's only two reasons. Either the destination is much more attractive than the home country. And actually, the related... Or the home country is so bad that they just got to get out at all costs. Right?
Well,
I mean, what other reason can there be?
I think if you look at this data, right, I think we do have to differentiate between those who really, really are fleeing from some persecution.
Mm-hmm. No, it's
those
not,
are
it's...
the genuine refugees, right? And those I would call the economic refugees.
Yeah,
certainly,
earn more
yeah.
money elsewhere, right?
Yeah. So I'm quite sure that 33,000, a lot of them are
economic refugees,
not necessarily, you know, there because they feel they're persecuted in one way or another.
Persecuted in the sense that they don't get paid what they deem fair wages for their skill sets, right? And Australia is 3-1. Singapore's 3-1, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the UK
is
5-1.
It doesn't make it right.
No, it doesn't make it right, but it's the reality. And Malaysia can't get out of its middle income trap. That's the sad reality.
It is. And so there's this, the Australia's Administrative Appeals Tribunal, apparently between July 2018 and April of this year, received just shy of 5,000 applications for protection visas from Malaysians. And some of the reasons cited for them were family stress, racial and religious discrimination, and domestic abuse. Now, racial
I like the family stress one.
I admittedly liked the family stress one too.
Husbands beating wives or wives beating husbands?
I don't know. It doesn't even come under this category, right?
It doesn't. And
they're just abusing it, That's the thing.
They're just abusing it. Yeah. Because, and even if this is true, okay, so domestic abuse obviously is a terrible problem. Even if this is a true case, why do you need to apply for protection in Australia to escape this? Why can't you turn to your own local authorities?
Because you get to stay on and because you think there's a better rule of law in Australia than in Malaysia.
Yeah, I think so. I think at the end of the day, it's like you described, right? It's a push. There's a push factor and there's a pull factor. The pull factor is that Australia presents a lot of opportunities. And the push factor is that there is mistrust in Malaysian institutions, I guess, is the problem.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Malaysians who do plain jump, they don't realize how difficult it can be in Australia. They go to UK, they go to Australia, they go to America or Canada. They don't realize that the opportunities for basically an entrepreneur, which is essentially what you are, because you can't get a job. There's so much competition for jobs in Australia, right, or the UK, that you have a better chance at starting your own business in Malaysia or ASEAN, because there's so much more growth here. They don't realize that.
I think the other risk is that you might be exploited, right? Because you have no status there. So you have no means to, let's say, healthcare, social services. Mm-hmm. If anything happens to you, where do you turn to? Because you're kind of always under the radar, right? Yeah. You can't actually surface because, let's say in America, you have no social security number, which is like the thing that makes you like...
That's a killer, man.
Yeah, if you don't have that, you can't even apply for insurance. How do you get under the tax?
Can't get credit.
You can't rent a house. What kind of life is that, though?
You can't even get protection if you're not getting minimum wage, because what regulation do you have to fall back on if you have no legal status?
And let's be honest, right? Companies, I mean, like some bosses will take advantage of that. They know that you're not documented, so they'll just, you know, pay you very, very little or if at all.
And then the worst perpetrators are the people from Asia, right? Because they'll just hire you and they'll know how badly off you are. And they'll just take advantage of you.
Mm.
You know, the Australian employers, they've got to abide by the rules. They can't lose their licenses. It's the Asians that might kill you.
But then what is there that we can do here in Malaysia to address this problem?
I don't know whether people are aware of the potential exploitation or how hard life is when you get there.
They don't realise. They see what's on the outside and the thing is green.
To a certain extent, like, you only need to look at some of the slums that we have here in Malaysia to see that exploitation happening firsthand, because this is the exact same thing that is happening in Malaysia. Economic migrants from Bangladesh, from Myanmar, from other less well-off, a lot of them Asian countries, coming here, and we complain about them to no end, that they're taking our jobs, that they're, you know, doing, and this is, but they are suffering because they have no status to fall back on. And if you plane jump to some place like Australia, you're in the exact same boat.
Well, they're all like listening to Ko Siu Chuang's one relative who's made it, right? Right? They're listening to that one success story and thinking, I'm going to be that success, right?
Yeah, but this is in the 70s. It's a very different time now. So much more hard.
Mm-hmm.
So much harder now.
Of course, but everybody wants to be the new king of Japan in London, you see.
Absolutely. Well, do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a couple of messages coming up for you, and then we'll be taking a look at what's been said in the papers. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Chuang and Shanning.
Were they singing about the plane jumpers, those who go their own way?
One never knows, but it's very apt, I guess, for the conversation that we were having just now.
Yes.
And we have actually had some social media responses. We've been talking about what could make optimism and whether it could make you live longer. We've been talking about plane jumpers, and we've been talking about the new app ecosystem. And Ramli Sirup on Twitter says, gratitude will help you live longer. Optimism will help you keep dating, even at 80 and still single.
Nice!
I really like this comment, you know.
He's quite hit the nail on the head.
Why not? You can find love at any age.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Now we're also going to be taking a look at some of the headlines that have been in the papers this morning. The Star has "It was all a charade." That's a quote appearing to be attributed to lead prosecutor Dato' Gopal Sriram in the Dato' Najib Razak's case. And next to it, as the 1MDB trial begins, a quote from lead counsel Tan Sri Muhammad Shafi Abdullah, which says, if Sriram is disqualified, trial will be nullified.
So this Gopal Sriram, he looks like a gangster. He looks so gangster in the picture. You know what I mean, right? No, the gangster good way, you know. Do you know what I mean, right? Because he's got these Ray-Ban things going on. He's got his cane thing going on. But he's in a suit thing going on.
He's like a cool PDD.
Something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the Malaysian Reserve has the same headline. I mean, same news. But the headline is, Joe Low colluded with Najib. Arab's Prince donation letter is a sham.
The edge goes with Mirror Image, which I prefer, actually. Because they don't look at all similar. One is short and pudgy, and the other one is tall and, you know, rather wizened. But apparently they were one and the same.
Yeah, I think that has been the 1MDB trial is really the top news in the papers this morning, because if we look at page, the story is continued in the Star page 3, and they've gone with the headline, Najib, and in quotes, set out to enrich himself. Underneath that is prosecution to prove he staged elaborate ploy to steal 2.3 billion ringgit from 1MDB.
I could have told them that. The New Straits Times is filled with bullet holes. You know why? Because Tansri Rafida Aziz has been interviewed. She's been shooting.
Ooh, Tansri Rafida Aziz.
Yeah.
Yes.
Page 1, page 2.
She's been on our breakfast grill.
She has. She interviewed Sharad Kutan in the end.
Yes, I remember listening to that and coming away
from it. She just took charge, man.
She's
you know
one
I mean?
Formidable lady who I really respect. I mean, yeah. She just keeps going, right?
She really does. And if you want to listen to that conversation, the interview by Tansri Rafida, absolutely. You know, you can find it on the BFM app the BFM app available on the Apple App Store or on Google Play. And actually, she's the front page of the New Straits Times, isn't she?
She is. And this is how different Malaysia Baru is, because New Straits Times now going with the headline, how long are we going to use crutches? Obviously referring to the booming policies or social agenda. But back in the day, you would never see the New Straits Times ever even go near a headline like that. But now they do.
Yes, yeah. We have definitely seen a difference of tone in
the
Straits
Times.
So.
I think
all the papers, actually.
Yeah, they ain't got no choice but to sell papers, don't they, right?
Well, they have to have independent editorial content.
Otherwise, you go the way of the Fleetwood Mac song in Utusan, Malaysia.
Yeah, we had that conversation with Gayatri Venkateswaran of the University of Nottingham. Because
Centre for Independent Journalism as well, right?
I don't think so anymore. She used to be. Now she's a professor of media and communication studies at Nottingham University. And we had this conversation because we were asking kind of, is there still a demand for this kind of almost politically slanted journalism that we used to see under the Barisan Nasional administration? And she said that, you know, yeah, there's always going to be. But at the end of the day, the important thing is, and because she reframed the conversation quite nicely, because we were asking, you know, should we have laws to ban political interference? She said, actually, no, we should have laws to protect journalists, because ensure that journalists can have editorial integrity without fear of repercussions, essentially.
Yeah, I asked the same thing of Ketat, actually. Ketat is the editor of The Edge. He says, I asked him, do you think that we should ban political ownership of newspapers and mainstream media? He says, no, because you can't, because it's a free...
It's
a human right. Yeah.
And then it's hard to enforce, right, at the end of the day.
It's very hard to enforce. Because you've got proxies and networks and cobwebs and all that, you know. Joe Lau showed you. It's very easy. You just have layer upon layer of shelf companies.
You just need an Arab prince.
Ah.
That's all you need.
I think none of us would say no to an Arab prince. But, you know, thank you very much thank you very much for all your social media responses this morning. That is all that we have for you from the papers, because we're heading into the 7 o'clock news. And after that, the business end of the morning run. But here to take you into the news is The Beatles with A Hard Day's Night, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.